Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Andy Finn Show. I'm Andy Finn, the Finn Man, and for the next hour, you're in Finland. Today is August 27th, 2007, and on this date, in 2001, a couple of things happened. They began work on the World War II monument on the Mall here in Washington, and I had just moved to Washington the year before, so I was just getting acquainted with certain issues, and one of them was there was controversy about this memorial in terms of where they placed it and whether it would ruin the scenery, etc., etc. The other thing that happened on this date 6 years ago was that there was a complaint filed against California Congressman Gary Condit for obstructing justice when it came to the disappearance of Chandra Levy. He had an affair with her, and he tried to cover it up. Well, meanwhile, they were looking for hot leads to her disappearance, and he obstructed the investigation. In any case, there's a bunch of things in the news today that we want to get to, and the biggest one is Alberto Gonzalez has resigned. I'm going to save that for the next segment, and I don't think I'll spend a lot of time on it tonight. You know, this is really kicking a dead horse. Gonzalez has been twisting slowly in the wind, to use a phrase from the Watergate era, for months. It's amazing how long it takes this administration to clean up its messes and try and move on and get something done. Second thing that's happened over the weekend, Michael Vick announced he was going to plead guilty. He did, in fact, plead guilty today to dogfighting charges. The NFL has suspended him indefinitely. And there's a lot of people think he will never play again in the NFL. And then other people say, no, the American people are very forgiving when you've got an arm like a rocket. Yeah, we'll see what happens there. But I'm not going to spend a lot of time on Michael Vick. I think we've just given him all the time he merits. Also, I'm not going to spend much time on this either, but I have to note that Senator Larry Craig of Idaho pleaded guilty earlier this month. It just came out in the papers today, to a misdemeanor disorderly conduct charge. He was arrested in June by an undercover police officer in the men's room at the Minneapolis St. Paul Airport. And basically, I think he was accused of lewd conduct, or it appeared to be lewd, whatever. The point is, he's been accused in the past of being gay. He was, quote, outed by a gay website that doesn't like Congress people in the closet who then come out for family values and are anti-gay. Which, if you're going to be a senator in Idaho, I think that's probably what you have to do. So it's an unfortunate situation for Craig, but the gay community has no mercy when you're one of their own, but you're in the closet. In any case, the police were conducting a sting operation inside this men's room because there were complaints of sexual activity there. And so Craig said that it was a misunderstanding. I complained to the police and they were misconstruing my actions. I was not involved in any inappropriate conduct. Oh, he also says he should not have pled guilty. He should have talked to a lawyer. So I'm not going to go any further into this. We'll find out more about what really is going down there, I think, as time goes on. And let's see. Well, I guess the other thing that's in the news, it really came out yesterday, the Democratic National Committee has taken all the delegates away from Florida for the Democratic convention, meaning Florida can hold its primary in January like it just decided to do, but the Democratic Party is going to hold to its commitment and take away all the nominating votes from any state that violates the policy, it's set, which is you can't go any earlier than they've already decided, which is essentially February 5th, I think, with the exception of New Hampshire and Iowa, who we all know are special. So Florida's got 30 days to move its, to negotiate, but basically to move its primary, and then it'll get its delegates back. So I haven't heard a lot of people speak about this, but I assume the general consensus is they will do it. Maybe they'll negotiate something, but if you pay any attention to this, you know that what happened was as soon as a couple of states, well, Michigan's also in the act here, claiming it's going to move it theirs to sometime in late January, which is going to push New Hampshire up and then a week, and then Iowa up a week before that, because both of those have in state law, I know New Hampshire does, I think Iowa does, that they have to be a week before everybody else. New Hampshire being, has to be 8 days before, it has to be a week before the any other primary in its state constitution or in its state laws, and Iowa says it's got to be 8 days before the New Hampshire primary. So we'll save any other time or news about the election. Rudy Giuliani is out there attacking Democrats again, as he usually does, and arguing he can do the economy with smoke and mirrors. He can keep all the tax cuts, give you more tax cuts, and not worry about the deficit. And the other thing that happened here, this is minor stuff, but the Washington Post is going off the Washington Post Radio is going off the air. Washington Post Radio has been putting its the Washington Post journalists on the local airwaves, and they're going off the air next month because they just don't attract enough listeners. So that is a shame. And I guess I should say something about my listeners. I see calls coming in, but the telephone apparatus is broken. I think it's still broken, but even if it isn't broken, tonight I'm by myself. And while I am doing a monologue, it's impossible to answer the phone and find out what people want and put them on the air. So there'll be no calls this evening. Anyway, what's depressing about Washington Post Radio going off the air is that there is no room for reasonable talk radio, is what this continues to signal. You know, one of the reasons I do my show here is I'm not liberal enough for Air America and that whole crowd, because they want to fight fire with fire, and so they want somebody that's as ridiculous on the left as Rush is on the right, but do it with humor. That is, mock them. And while I'm willing to mock them, I'm not willing to mock them. So I'm not far enough right, and left, and Washington Post Radio is too center of the road, too reasonable, apparently, to generate ratings, at least local ratings. So another grand experiment in radio gone by the wayside. Let's see. Well, we're going to save the information about the Iraq War for later, but the one thing that is worth noting is that there was a piece in the Washington Post this morning that talked about the fact that 90% of the enlistees, the recruits that the Army has since late July, okay, so basically mostly the month of August, 90% of them have taken this $20,000 quick ship bonus. Basically, if you sign on the dotted line and you agree to ship out quickly, usually you get 6 months to get your affairs in order and join the service. Roughly six, I believe. If you sign for a quick ship, that is, you're ready to go to training right away, they will give you a $20,000 bonus. Now, your first year in the service, you only make, it's less than $20,000 actually. So it's like a year's salary bonus if you go to war right now. And not go to war, go to in the service right now. So you may remember that the Army was having trouble filling its recruiting goals in, I guess it was April and May or May and June. They fell short. And this is, always turns political. You know, what happens is the right argues, oh, the people that are pointing this out don't want us to succeed. And they say, well, we're still on track for the year. We're, we got 95% or whatever. But the point was there was a dip. And how the service responded was to have this $20,000 bonus. Well, this is the thing about business or economics. If you throw enough money at something, you can solve a problem. So we are, quote, making our recruiting goals, but it's because we're throwing more money at the problem. And that's what happens when you're at war and people don't want to go to war. So this brings to mind for me a debate that has been going on TV and in the blogosphere and in columns. The columnists on the right and the conservative talk show hosts, every time somebody mentions that we're not making our recruiting goals, or when someone mentions that it's the lower socioeconomic status kids in this country that are joining the service and paying the price in Iraq, the flag wavers on the right get all upset about it. A prime example is Melanie Morgan, but most of the conservative talk show hosts, Rush Limbaugh does it, Hannity does it. They want us to believe the narrative that all the recruits that are going in are, quote, volunteers and want to serve the country and want to wear the uniform proudly, and so they don't mind going to Iraq. Now, it's an oversimplification of the argument, but I remember someone, it was a journalist, I think, making the case on a TV show that the majority of people joining the service were doing so for economic reasons. And boy, did this offend Melanie Morgan. Now, it is true, of course, that there's a percentage of people who believe, you know, service is in their family a lot of times. Their father was in the service, their grandfather, maybe a brother. And so they want to do their patriotic duty. But in general, at times of war, it's harder to get people to volunteer. And of course, we haven't had this kind of a war, this big a war, this long a war, since the all-volunteer army came along. Mostly we've had these very short wars where no one got killed, like the Kosovo War, where we did it mostly from the air, or these short incursions that presidents do to buck up their support, kind of like Reagan's foray into Grenada to make the country safe for the medical students that were there. So very little risk of casualties, or very few casualties in those situations. But it drives the right crazy when they're confronted with the fact, mostly these are economic decisions for kids, and most of the recruiters in the country are recruiting in areas where kids, high school graduates, maybe not even graduates now, they've lowered the bar, of course, on this besides increasing the money, don't have a lot of other economic options, and this is the best option. So we say that our best and our brightest are in the service, but it'll be interesting to see in 20 years, 30 years, if those are the people we're electing to Congress, or if the people that get elected to Congress are still from the upper socioeconomic classes and their parents had been in Congress, in, you know, as they are in some cases now, or they came from Harvard or, you know, Ivy League pedigree or something. So it'll be interesting to see if we really believe they are our best and our brightest down the road. But the Army is back on track because of these $20,000 bonuses. The only difficulty there, of course, is that now we're spending a lot more money than we used to spend to fill the ranks. And I guess it's worth staying on Iraq for just a couple of minutes here, just listing a few things that happened in the news. I'm not going to deal with policy exactly. We've got this whole issue of, is the surge working or is the surge not working? So a general, Major General Rick Lynch this week, or actually the end of last week, warned against a pullout from Iraq, which I'm not surprised about that. And three more Iraqis in the Iraqi cabinet have formally resigned, right? There's this whole block of Sunnis that walked out. But now three secular Iraqis have walked out, and they're blaming Maliki and saying he's ineffective, he's not getting anything done, he doesn't listen to us, and we're all done being in the cabinet. You know, if only we could get our politicians, when they're upset, to resign. No, I don't really mean that. We need them there. I'm still trying to figure out why, but we need them. And then there was John Warner. John Warner, our senator from Virginia and the leading Republican voice on military matters, great deal of experience, the end of last week, he called for a pullout by next winter of some troops. He believes that the president ought to announce he's going to pull 5,000 troops out by the winter time. And he doesn't want to pin Bush down too much on the number, the date. He wants to give him flexibility, but he wants him to try and shake up the Iraqi government and Maliki, because he just came back from 4 days in Iraq. And, you know, the general impression is there's some progress in Iraq. Some people are saying that that's due to the surge in troops, the 30,000 additional troops that we've sent over there. And some people say, well, it's because we struck this deal with the Sunnis in Anbar province, and the Sunnis have realized that they don't want Al-Qaeda in their backyard. They are brutal and killing people that step out of line, and they don't want to be dominated by these lunatics. So even if we accept that the situation is better militarily, we still have this little problem on the political side, and that is that they're on vacation for a month, but when they come back, there's no particular reason to think there's going to be any more progress than there has been in the last 3 years. So that's a bit of a dilemma. We will have to see what all that's going to mean. And I guess what we will finish up with here is just a couple of minutes about Iran, because this keeps coming up. The Washington Post did an editorial last week. It's almost a week old now, but it was supporting Bush on this issue of declaring the Revolutionary Guard as a, this is the Iranian Revolutionary Guard, as a terrorist organization. And they basically supported it. For anyone out there on the right, and I know that I have some conservative listeners, please, please, please stop claiming that the Washington Post is a liberal newspaper. Its editorial policy is extremely hawkish. It has supported Bush on the war and continued to support him, although it's taken him to task for mistakes that have been made in the execution. It supported him on the surge, and now it's supporting him in rattling the saber with Iran. Now, you can say, well, this is just about the terrorists that are crossing the border. If you don't understand that the Bush administration is looking at its options in terms of taking out Iran's nuclear program, and that means 1,000 sorties to wipe out as much of its underground nuclear facilities as it can before Bush leaves office, you're not paying attention to the inside the beltway scuttlebutt. It's quite clear from several reports that one way this could play out is that George W. Bush has been convinced by his inner circle and the neocons that he's the only hope for the world to take out Iran. That if he doesn't take action before he leaves office on January 20th, 2009, the next president won't have the cojones to do it. So it's up to Bush. There's some congressman that has introduced a bill to prohibit Bush from taking action in Iran without the expressed written consent of the commissioner of the NFL. No, of Congress. And so we'll see what happens there, but I've got a bet with my son, who is a 20%er on the left. I'm so proud of him. He's fighting those 20%ers on the right. But we disagree about how to go about things, but he is convinced that George W. Bush is going to attack Iran. And I have to tell you that I have trouble telling him, no, 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 that would never happen. I think that it's about a 50-50 chance right now, and that's not good, because, and I'll just try and wrap this up, but here's the problem. People say, oh, Ahmadinejad's insane. Ahmadinejad's rhetoric is insane. It's not clear he would have the authority if Iran ever gets a bomb. And again, this is like the logic with Saddam Hussein, right? Bush said he was a threat to our homeland. How would that work? Well, if he gets nuclear weapons down the road, and if he were willing to give it to terrorists, and if the terrorists could sneak it into the United States, then we'd have a mushroom cloud over an American city. That's a lot of if-ing. And it's the same with Iran. If they get a nuclear weapon in the next 5 to 8 years, and the range on years varies greatly, but that's kind of in the ballpark, and if it's up to Ahmadinejad, and if he means what he says, and he's that crazy, and if the mullahs and everybody else in the country can't stop him, which there's good reason to believe they might, and then they might immediately, as soon as they get the bomb, try and set it off in the direction of Israel. I don't think they're that stupid. They know the retaliation would be tremendous. Israel has between 200 and 300 nuclear weapons. They've never acknowledged it, but that's the unofficial count. So, this idea of attacking Iran is wrong for another reason, and that is that you can make the case that soft power works better. Ahmadinejad came to power because Bush was already rattling the saber, and he put Iran in the axis of evil. Right? Think of what happens in this country when another country, when we are threatened, we get nationalistic. And we want somebody that's going to keep us safe and going to be tough. Well, that's what Iran wants too. So we could tone down the rhetoric, and we might actually get a little farther. In any case, the Andy Finn Show will be back right after this.
Hi, I'm Andy Finn. You know, even if someone handed me $1 million this morning, I'd still be doing my radio show on WEBR. Why? Because I have commitment. I have dedication. Plus, I signed a contract. Now, if you'll do the same, I'll have one more dedicated listener. Don't worry, you can void your contract if I ever get obsessed with liberals or gays, the flag, the pledge, embryonic stem cells, the UN, illegal immigrants, missing white women, or the country of France. So tune in the Andy Finn Show on WEBR, Mondays at 10 p.m. Hey, if you had $1 million, you could buy a radio station.